and welcome to part number 15, the last of the basic steps in learning policy debate. And we want to congratulate you for having made it to the end. Or for those of you who just fast-forwarded to the end, that's okay too. We kind of put them in random order. But we did want to cover the things that you needed to know before you went to one of your first debate tournaments. And that brings us to part number 15, the debate tournament experience. My name is Alfred C. Snyder. I'm the Edwin W. Lawrence Professor of Forensics at the University of Vermont, but you can call me Tuna. And I want to be your debate coach. Well, I am your debate coach. And I'm here with another one of your debate coaches, Andy Ellis, who coaches debate at the University of Vermont. Good to have you back again, Andy. You've been here for like four or five of these now.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about the debate tournament experience. What is a tournament? Well, it's a lot like you would think of many sports tournaments that schools get involved in. For example, many college basketball teams go to tournaments. And at that tournament, it'll be held on one campus, and a number of different schools will bring their basketball teams to that site. They'll all play each other, and then there'll be like a championship game to determine the tournament champion. That's a lot like what a debate tournament is. A debate tournament is where they have an event at one central site. A number of different schools bring their debate teams to those sites. Now, as we know, each of the teams in a policy debate has two people, and so your school may enter one, two, three, four, five, or like the University of Vermont does sometimes, 17 or 18 teams at one tournament. It's okay, we travel to the tournament on a bus. Just like in high school, I guess. And they bring a bunch of teams together from one school, and then another school will bring their teams, and another school will bring their teams, and so you'll have a number of schools with many different teams competing against each other. Usually, there'll be what we would cybernetically refer to as a phased array of debates. There'll be round one, everyone will debate. Round two, everyone will debate again. Round three, round four. Some tournaments have three rounds, some tournaments have as many as eight rounds. Some tournaments are one day long, some can be 4 days long. So tournaments are different. The tournaments that you're probably going to start debating at won't be 4 days long and won't be eight rounds, but you'll work your way up to it, I'm sure. Then, after the preliminary debates, they take the teams with the best one-loss, win-loss record and the best speaker points and seed them into an elimination bracket. Just like they have in tennis tournaments where one meets eight and two meets seven, so that they create an elimination bracket and you debate other teams and there's a debate off until finally there's only two teams left and they have a final round to determine who the tournament champion is. Not all tournaments have elimination rounds. Sometimes they just have preliminary rounds and hand out the awards. Local leagues, some of the urban debate leagues, do things like that. So you'll experience, but there's many different variety of tournaments, but it's all where people come together, different schools, different teams, and they debate each other a number of times. Then there are judges. There are judges who judge these debates. The judge can be a coach from a third school who's not represented in the debate. The judge could be someone that's been hired by the tournament. A judge could be a supporter of the debate activity who's in the area. A judge could be someone who's working with the urban debate leagues, for example, who wants to judge. Judges could be average citizens. Sometimes the judge is the bus driver. A lot of different people can be the judge. But the judge is the one who decides who wins the debate. Now, at a debate tournament, because there's a lot of debates going on at once, there's not going to be a big crowd watching your debate. Because if there are 50 debates going on at once, you can't have 50 crowds. It's hard to gather on a Saturday morning. And so probably the only people who will be in your debate at debates of the tournament will be you and your partner, the other team, and the judge. And that's all. Now, for those of you just learning and just starting out, it's not necessarily a bad thing that there's not a big crowd there to see you make mistakes. You'll learn, you'll develop, and you'll get better later on. There'll be crowds watching you debate. So that's basically what a debate tournament is. But before you get to the debate tournament, you have to prepare for the debate tournament.
When preparing for the debate tournament, I think there's several things that you need to keep in mind. First of all, you need to worry about logistics. You need to worry about how you're going to get to the tournament, when it is, where it is, what your form of transportation is, who's driving, all of those logistical questions. And there's really no advice that I can give you for how to deal with that. Just make sure that you've arranged with your team travel plans that you understand and that you would take the same action you would. If you need to let your parents know where you're going to be, do that. Just do whatever you would do if you're going to travel. But you need to make sure you're going to do that so that you can know when you have to worry about or when you have to have your preparation done by. We'll talk about preparation in a second, but before we do that, one more logistical thing, or somewhat logistical. I think you want to make sure that you know who you're going to the tournament with. You want to make sure you have your partner situation well solidified. Before you decide to go to the tournament, it's probably good to know who you're going to be debating with. This allows for both coordination of the logistics and coordination of the preparation in order to debate well at that tournament. Now, when it comes to preparing for the tournament, there are several things that you want to do for yourself in a competitive sense, not necessarily the logistical sense. You want to go through your evidence and analyze it and figure out what pieces of evidence you need to take with you and what are the most important things you have. You want to make sure you have all of your important evidence. For example, when you get on the bus to go to the tournament or you get in the car to go to the tournament, double check to make sure you have your first affirmative, because otherwise you won't be able to, you'll have a hard time debating and a lot of your preparation will have been wasted. Another thing you may want to do when preparing for the tournament is always carry your first affirmative with you, because you'll have even more security at that point that you have it, especially if you're working through some sort of transportation where you at some point lose contact with your luggage, like an airplane or a train or a bus. Any of these are chartered things, you could lose potentially, in the worst disaster case scenario, lose your evidence. But if you have your first affirmative, you'll be able to track it down. Now, the last thing that you need to do, once you're ready, once you feel that you're able to debate at this tournament, that you have set a level of work for yourself that is realistic to achieve, and you've achieved that, you need to sit down and you need to relax before you go to the tournament, because the tournament time is a tiring, or can be a tiring and busy time in which you forget to relax, you forget to take time for yourself. So the night before you leave for a tournament should not be a night that you stay up working really late. It should be a night that you get a little bit of work done and then you go to bed, because that way you'll best be prepared for the tournament.
Okay, well, now it's time to go to the debate tournament. And you probably will be coordinating plans on how to get to the debate tournament with your coach or your league. You should have information. One piece of advice that I really want to give is leave early to get to the debate tournament. Nobody ever missed a debate tournament because they got there too early. So many people try to cut it so tight. For example, in the New York Urban Debate League, students have to take subway trips from one part of New York to the other, and it can be really unpredictable. Sometimes the trains aren't running on time, sometimes there's a problem. Maybe there'll be a traffic jam if you're driving to the tournament. Maybe there'll be a delay at the airport. Whatever it is, always leave plenty of time to arrive at the tournament. One of the other things, reasons you really want to arrive at the tournament early is you want to see the pairings as soon as you can. You want to find out who you're debating. And if you arrive there early, you'll have time to see who you're debating, where you're debating. You'll be able to get yourself mentally and spiritually prepared for the debate, and you'll be calm and relaxed. But if you arrive at the last minute and you're gonna forfeit the debate unless you start right away, you can be really hurried. So make sure that you get there early. Make sure that you have everything. A little checklist. I need legal pads. I need pens. I need to have our evidence. We have one evidence carrier. We have two evidence carriers. Make sure that you have your partner. Call your partner in the morning. When you're going to a debate tournament, call your partner on the phone. Wake your partner up. Make sure your partner's there, because you're in real trouble if you get to the debate tournament and you don't have a partner. When you arrive at the debate tournament, maybe there'll be donuts or bagels and juice. Grab them. It's free food. Don't be shy. I know you won't. Soon after that, you might want to register. You want to let them know that you're at the tournament. Generally, the coach will register and tell everyone they're there. If you arrive separate from your coach, make sure to let your coach know you are there. If your coach isn't there, make sure you go to the tournament staff and let them know that you're there, that you're ready to debate. Soon after that, the pairings will be released. Now, that sounds very ominous, like you release the monsters. Or the pairings are simply a sheet of paper which says who debates who, where the debate's taking place, and who the judge is. Now, generally, at some tournaments, there'll be more than one division, the junior varsity division, the varsity division, or in your case, probably the novice division, and you'll want to make sure to find the pairings for the novice division. On those pairings, you can look and see, you know, where are you on this pairing? Now, different leagues have different ways of identifying teams. Generally, it's done by the name of your school. So if you're Martin Luther King High School, a lot of times then they'll use the first letter of the last names of the two speakers. So Alfred Snyder and Andy Ellis, we would be University of Vermont, S-E for Snyder and Ellis. So you can generally look to find yourself on the pairings. Once you see where you and your team name is located on the pairings, then you can see what room it is you're going to. You want to remember that. Who you're debating against, what side you're on, and who the judge is. Once you have this information, then you're ready for the next step, getting ready for the debate.
One of the important parts about the next step is to have the best information you can about the team you're debating and the judge you have in the back of the room. If you have a coach that you can go to and ask these questions and say, I'm debating such and such team in front of this judge, can you tell me something about them? Your coach will usually be able to give you some information about what the other team runs and what the judge is like. If you don't have a coach, you can always go to friends or other debaters or other people on your team, and you can ask them for that information. And people at this point will be asking you for the information as well. So once the pairings come out, there's a time in which information is exchanged. And a lot of times at tournaments, your coach or the person who gives you information will want to tell you a lot more information than you may necessarily have time for. And I'm not saying don't listen to your coaches. I'm just saying that the possibility exists that if you have to start around within 5 minutes, there's a little bit of information you can get from that in order to start preparing. And you always have to remember how soon the time limit is to actually start debating so that you don't undertake a project that you won't be able to finish in 5 minutes. So the key things to do when you're trying to prepare for the round are know how much time you have before the round starts. Go to the round and see if the judge is there. If they're not there, then leave one or your partner or yourself there and send the other one out to collect information. If they are there, ask them when they would like to start the round. If you can do these type of things, you can have the time you need to make the decisions and to get the information. Then go to either your coaches, your teammates, your friends, whoever you can to try to better inform yourself about what's going on this debate so that you can have a strategy and you can have a good debate with the other team in front of the judge that the judge will like.
Make sure to keep the pairings too. Mm-hmm. It's a really good idea to get a copy of the pairings for yourself and keep them, because later on in the tournament, those pairings can help you learn a lot. Because let's say in round three, you're negative against the team from Martin Luther King High School. Well, you can look and see from the round one pairings, oh, the last time they were affirmative, who did they debate? Who was judging them? Oh, I know that judge. I'll go ask them what Martin Luther King's case is. Or, oh, they debated my buddies that are also on my team. I'll ask them. So keep the pairings. They'll help you later. One important thing that I think Andy expressed is don't delay going to your debate. Go right to your debate. Sometimes judges don't like it when you don't show up. And if you are late to your debate, sometimes the judge will decide that since you're not there, you're forfeiting the debate. Or the tabulation room, the people managing the tournament, will forfeit your debate because you're not starting on time. Just like if you didn't show up for a basketball game to start on time, you would forfeit the game. So you have to be there when the game is supposed to start. Don't be late. Also, go to the right debate. Go to the debate you're supposed to go to. Don't engage in switching things around in the middle of the tournament. Don't switch the rounds that you and somebody else from your school are in. Don't switch partners in the middle of the tournament. I mean, you can do that, but you need to talk to the control room, the people who are supervising the tournament, before you do that. Because it's a competition and people are keeping track of wins and losses and points, you need to make sure to go to the debate you're supposed to go to. Now, the actual debate itself is different than a practice debate. You've probably been in some practice debates beforehand, but, you know, a tournament debate is different. It's for real.
It is. It's for real, and you have to remember that the people you're debating against are not necessarily your good friends who are on your team. They're not. You're not debating the round in front of your coach who knows all of your arguments, or in front of a judge or a teacher who all four debaters know really well. You have to, I think, remember that it's a real competitive round, and being such, you have to treat your opponents and your judge with the respect that they should be given. And I think that that level of respect is necessary to make the debate go on, because no one wants to be in a debate which they're not respected, either as a judge or as a team. And I think that if you remember always to respect them as if they're people you don't know who have something valuable to say, then you, I think, will have a better debate situation. I also think you need to remember that the practice round, or the actual debate round, is necessarily more formal than the practice round. Until some of the boundaries are broken down between you and the other team that you may not know and the judge that you don't know, you have to, I think, appeal to a denominator of judging, which is somewhat formality, because you don't know where the judge falls otherwise. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's an important public event. You're meeting people you don't know, and you want to make a good impression on them. You should act in a debate just like you would act at a job interview. I think that's a pretty good standard. You want to be an impressive young person. You're asking for them to vote for you, and I think that that's how you should act, just like if you were trying to get a job. I think what you said is very important, Andy. It's very important to realize that the other team, you don't know them, but they're just like you. They're also probably concerned. They're nervous. They, you know, may be worried about whether they're going to win or lose. So you have that in common. And I think you want to make it easy on each other. You want to be polite. You want to be nice. Don't worry. No matter what happens, someone will win and someone will lose. But at least you want to make it an enjoyable experience. Nobody wants to be locked in a room with a bunch of jerks on a Saturday morning, especially not the judge. And the judge will not give you the kind of speaker points or the decision you deserve if you act like a jerk. Nice people win debates. Clever, intelligent, polite people. Jerks don't. So if you want to win, it's pretty easy to figure out what to do. Once you're in the debate, you're there. Stay in the debate. Go to the bathroom before the debate starts. Get yourself some water to drink during the debate. We have ours, just in case we need some to drink while we're talking to you. Make sure that you have that as well, that you're really ready for the debate. Once the debate starts, stay there. Don't go away. Speak within the time limits. Show respect for the limits of the debate. When the time is up, stop talking. When your preparation time is done, stand up and start talking. Respect the time limits of the debate. A really good idea is if you can get yourself a really cheap stopwatch like this one. Cheap ones are fine, but it's nice to have a watch to know how much time you have left in your speech, how much preparation time you have left. And also, it can allow you to run the time on your opponent's speeches just in case they should decide to add an extra minute to their speech, which has been done. We're urging you not to do that, but it's nice to be able to be sure to keep track of the time in the debate. Well, now the debate's over, and the big moment arrives.
Boom. At the end of the debate, the judge will sometimes disclose and sometimes not disclose. And I think that there are three situations in which this normally happens. The first is that the judge says, "Thank you, I enjoyed the debate," and gets up and leaves, and later on you get a ballot.
A written ballot.
A written ballot in which they have discussed the reason for their decision. You get to read it on the bus, and you get no interface with the judge. That happens a lot of times. There are a lot of judges who do feel that that is their role as judge. And as a debater, you just have to accept that. You can ask them questions, but you shouldn't push them further than they want to go, because it's not going to change anything. And if they don't want to explain to you, you know, they'll tell you they'll explain it on the ballot, and you have to give them the benefit of the doubt in that case and let them explain it on the ballot. The second possibility for the way that a judge may disclose what they felt about the round after the round is they may talk about the round, and they may evaluate some issues within the round, but they may not give you a decision per se. They may give you some criticisms and you some help to get better, but they're not telling you which way they voted. In these rounds, again, you have to take that and you have to use it for what it's worth, and you have to use it so that when you have that judge again, or when your teams have that judge again, you can know what that judge likes and dislikes so you can cater to her or his needs. And I think that both of those kind of disclosures are frequent, and both of them can benefit you in certain ways. The final type of disclosure is the disclosure in which the judge, in the process of giving you their decision within the round, talks about how they reached that decision within the round. They go through and they evaluate the arguments, and they share with you their evaluation of the arguments. And then this usually culminates in them telling you which team won or lost. Now, within these cases, the criticism that the critic has to offer after the round focuses much more on the specific levels of the argument than in the other two models, because this model assumes that debaters pretty much know what they're doing and know how to make their arguments, and just talks about the evaluation of the arguments. Listen to these, because they will help you make your arguments better in front of other people. If the judge is operating out of that mindset that the skill level and the skill practices of the debaters are irrelevant and only the arguments are, then those arguments that judge makes will help you convince other judges who operate out of the same mindset to vote for you. And all three of these disclosures can be important to you, because they can give you the information you need to know what to do in the future and to assess what happened in the course of that round. Now, after you get the disclosure, sometimes you'll get a victory and sometimes you'll get a loss if the judge tells you who won and lost. But you always have to remember that you shouldn't, A, react too happily to victories, and you shouldn't have a big celebration dance when the judge says that you won, because it doesn't help the other team, it doesn't help anything, and it's not necessary within the course of the round. I mean, the other team probably already is less than happy that they won, and you don't need to rub it in. The other thing is, you don't need to get overly upset when the judge decides against you, because you always have to remember that there will be another debate, and there will be a time when you can make that argument the right way. Getting upset or getting overly excited just lessens your credibility within the community and makes it less likely that you'll get the wins that you want in the future.
Mm-hmm. So whatever your interaction with the judge, listen to them carefully. It's nice that they were there. You should appreciate that they were there, and their feedback is important to you learning. Every win and every loss is a chance to learn something, but you have to listen to the judge and understand what the judge is saying to do that. You always want to be nice. Don't be a jerk to a judge who voted against you, because at the next tournament, guess what? They'll judge you again. You want to make friends, not enemies, and the communication process overall is enriched when you do that. Don't be afraid to write down the suggestions that judges have for you so you won't forget them. But whatever happens, win or lose, you can't be too fazed, because round one is over. And guess what?
Round two begins.
It's time for round two, right? You've got to move on psychologically, personally. You have to move on to the next debate. Don't dwell too much about how bad things might have gone in one debate. Think about how you can do them better, and then move on to your next debate and try to do things better. So you're done with round one. You've gone on to round two, and the entire cycle repeats as you go into round two. I just want to talk to you about a few things that happen in debate tournaments. There are different kinds of debate rounds. There are preset debate rounds, and there are power paired debate rounds. The preset debate rounds are, say, the first round of the tournament or the first couple of rounds of the tournament. They will sort of randomly pair teams against each other. After that, they have what's called power pairing. That means that you will meet a team that has a record a lot like yours. The 2-0 teams will meet the 2-0 teams, and the 0-2 teams will meet the 0-2 teams. This is a really good thing. This means as the debate goes on, you're debating teams that are more and more like you, that have an experience level and a record and about as much competitive success as you do. So it makes for more evenly matched debates, which I think is good. It makes them a lot more educational. So there are preset rounds and there are power pair rounds. After the preliminary debates, they will have elimination debates. And in the elimination debates, they'll take the teams with the best win-loss record and also rank them based on their speaker points. Every speaker can get 1 to 30 points in every debate, with 30 being good and 1 being pretty bad. And then they will take the top 8 teams and seed them into an elimination bracket. Like at a tennis tournament, 1 will meet 8, 2 will meet 7. And then they'll debate each other off until there's a tournament champion. Usually in these elimination rounds, they have more than one judge. There will be, for example, 3 judges. So that's what happens at a debate tournament. But important stuff also happens after the debate tournament as well.
Yeah, after the debate tournament, when you're on your way home, you should get all of your ballots from your coach, whenever your coach wants to pass them out. Usually sometime on the way home, but maybe not right away. But whatever the case is, you should get all your ballots, read them, go over them, and sort of debrief yourself on the day's events, on what happened today, and focus somewhat on yourself, on what you needed to do from judges' comments, from what you felt you did well and what you didn't do well. Talk to your teammates, talk to your coaches about it, and have just sort of a winding down conversation about the weekend where you identify some things that you did well, and you also identify some things that you need to work on so that the next tournament is even more competitively successful than this one, and even more educationally successful.
It's also good after the tournament to share information with your team members and your coach. What arguments did you hear? What are other people's affirmative cases? What are the arguments that people are using against our affirmative case? And you can get better. Because as soon as one tournament's over, it's time to start preparing for the next tournament. Debate is a series of cycles. You have a debate, then another debate, then another debate, then the tournament's over. You have a tournament, then you have another tournament, and another tournament. You have a semester, then you have another semester. You have a year, your novice year, and then you have your junior varsity year. It's a series of cycles, and you can move ahead. Don't worry if you don't have great competitive success early on. Sometimes some of the best debaters, it takes them a while to warm up. Also, don't be too proud if you have a lot of debate success early, because as Satchel Paige says, there's no need to look back. You know somebody's gaining on you. So if you get out front, that doesn't mean you can ease up or be too proud. Don't forget to be a gracious winner and a gracious loser, because everybody's going to win and lose, and we have to learn about it. That's part of the debate tournament experience. Well, thanks a lot, Andy. We made it to number 15, yes, all the way to the end. Thank you for sticking with us through this 15-part series of instruction for basic policy debate. We talked a lot about winning and losing, but I think it's clear that everybody's a winner with debate. So as long as you keep winning, you'll be debating. And as long as you keep debating, you'll be winning. Thanks a lot.